Cool.
Yeah.
It may or may not be a good idea. I might enjoy it.
Boy, I am a non-committal Yahoo, aren't I?
No, I think you just don't want to be overly exuberant. Or
What is that?
no, that's not true. My suspicion is that you don't want to be undeservedly excited about something or unearnestly excited about something, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know
Sincerity
how I
is
could.
important to you, is it not?
Sincerity is, yeah, I would say so. I would say a lot. I don't know if anyone would say no, though, to that question.
Oh, I've known some people who would say no to that question.
Really?
I've known some people who would say that sincerity is just a mask you put on to conceal your insincerity.
Oh, sure.
Don't be happy, be real.
Oh, it's the selfish gene kind of
Yeah,
thing, you know?
yeah.
Oh, you're just nice to people because if you weren't, they would eat you.
Yep. I've known my plenty of people who are like that, who had an active dislike of me. Like a shouting dislike of me, and to which I'm going like, what? Whoa, what's going on? Why are you talking so loud and angrily?
Oh, man. Yeah.
And I used to feel really stupid in their presence, and I've since learned that, oh, you just don't trust people.
Yeah, reminds me of a time. Let's see, I was in let's see, I was I'll modify this a little bit. I'll say I was visiting a distant relative when I was about going into it's no, into 7th grade. Or yeah, it was just the summer between 7th grade and 8th grade. And so what, how old was I? 14? Something like that.
That'd be like 12 or
12 or
13.
13? There you go. Yeah. That sounds about right. A little more awkward. So yeah, that sounded accurate there. But what I don't know, like one of my distant relatives was driving us to an arcade or whatever, and I don't know if you knew this or not, but sometimes I would be very free with letting out the F-bomb and whatnot. And one of my relatives said, you know, something disparaging to me, and I said, F-bomb. And then it looked like it hurt her feelings, you know. And I was like, well, you know, I didn't mean to do that. I'm sorry. You were, you know, I thought that what you said was kind of mean, and but that wasn't the right way for me to respond, you know. And but me saying I'm sorry caused this person, like, their discomfort in the whole situation went to, there's no meter high enough. It's like full tilt. Okay. Oh my God. Like, you don't say you're sorry, right?
What do
So,
you say?
yeah, I don't know, man. But
Sorry, bro.
yeah, you don't. Yeah, so
My
something
bad.
about showing the weakness and being able to, you know, say like, I did not mean to hurt your feelings. In fact, I am sorry about that. Wow. Anyway, so yeah, I mean, I'm slightly wired in the way of just, guess sincerity is one way to put it. Just
Oh.
direct, simple. I don't know. Simple.
Yeah, and you come on, dude. That's a limited resource in our world. Your story describes somebody who has a real problem being sincere, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, they wouldn't react that way to direct sincerity.
Yeah. And it actually, yeah, though it's actually pretty sad. It's like, wow, really? Come on. That's a bummer, you know, like that you'd be that put off. And it's not, yeah, anyway, yeah, it was like, okay, why would you? My mind went into analyzing how this happened and like, why would you react that way kind of thing. And
Yeah.
then, yeah, anyway,
So
it
you've
made me
always been
more
wired that
sorry.
way.
What's that?
You've always been wired that way then.
Yeah, it's pretty easy going into UI design and UX and all that stuff.
Yeah. No,
Yep.
it's like we're supposed to outgrow certain things as we enter adulthood. And some people argue that I didn't outgrow the right things because you people who've watched the show have seen the stuff that's behind me, right? People come over to my studio, adults, and they're like, "Oh, what a fun Willy Wonka place you got!" Right?
I
And
just
there's that.
welled up. I don't get jealous, Jersey. I don't. Except That STF-1? That damn STF-1! Curse you!
It's pretty awesome.
I know. Shut up!
Have I shown you how the Daedalus and the, what's the other ship called? The other arm? They come off. They come off and you can use them in boat mode.
That's...
Fully transformable into all modes. It's pretty sweet. If you look really close, you can see Captain Global on the bridge. No, you can't.
That is awesome. Yeah, anyway, obviously that's not my reaction, but seriously, you mentioned that, and it's like I have tuned it out a little bit.
Oh, the stuff behind me?
Yeah, that damn SDF one. I mean, there's a lot of other stuff back there that's awesome as well, but that one
it
hits me in a primal way.
That's so funny, because like, my pride and joy on that shelf is the Masterpiece Rodimus Prime.
Mm.
But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Yeah, there's He-Man figures up there, the top shelf are my Dinobots and my Transformers the Movie characters, Beast Wars Megatron, Optimal Optimus, the original Transformers mini bots, several Rodimus Primes, because I love Rodimus Prime. Anyway, but my story was going with this idea of, you know, it's like there's this story we tell ourselves that we're supposed to outgrow childish things. And a friend of mine once said, the childish things you're supposed to outgrow are throwing tantrums, being selfish, being a bully, not working well with others. Those are the childish things. You don't have to outgrow Mario Brothers. You don't have to outgrow, you know, cartoons. Mm-hmm. You outgrow the childish things, the things that delighted you. Oh, man, I wish I had that Ray Bradbury book. I got to tell this Ray Bradbury story. Mm. So I've been reading Ray Bradbury's Zen in the Art of Writing. Have you heard of this book?
No.
It's Essays About Writing by Ray Bradbury. And God, I love my wife. She was reading it, actually, and she made me read one of the essays because she's like, tell me who I thought of when I read this essay. And he tells the story of when he was 9 years old and he discovered the Buck Rogers comic strip. Mm. And he fell in love with the character. He fell in love with the world. Everything about it was electrifying. Buck Rogers in the 24th century, you know, fighting aliens, protecting the universe and all this stuff. And he collected the Buck Rogers strips in a scrapbook, right? That's what kids did back then. You clip them on a newspaper, put them in a scrapbook. Mm-hmm. Other friends in town saw him doing that and said, oh, you're a baby. Oh, look at the baby collecting the Buck Rogers comic strips. What a dumb baby for loving something that's for little kids, dumb baby. Well, he felt bad that his friends made him feel that way, so he ripped up the comic strips. Weeks later, he couldn't shake this empty feeling he had. He didn't know why he felt so empty and sad. And suddenly it hit him like a ton of bricks, and he started sobbing, according to his story, that he realized the void in his life was no Buck Rogers. And he realized that those weren't friends of mine. No friend of mine would make me part with something that I love so dearly. He went back to collecting Buck Rogers comic strips, and he made a pact with himself that if anybody challenges his love of something that he loves so earnestly and so sincerely, he will pack up his dinosaurs and go home. And I turned to my wife, and I'm like, so the part when he cried because he didn't have Buck Rogers in his life made you think of me, didn't it? She's like, yeah. But okay, so where am I going with this? This idea that we have to give up childish things and it's so human of us. When we say things, we think of physical things. We don't think of activities or behaviors. We should say giving up childish behaviors, not childish things. And when you see people who have who have trouble with sincerity or have trouble being direct or, thinking about how other people feel, right? People don't outgrow the childish behaviors sometimes. And this is my only gripe of the day, and I'm going to be judgmental just for a moment here.
Sweet.
There are two groups of people who look at another group of people and their behavior and say, boo, that sucks. That's lame that you like that thing. Only two groups of people that I've seen, that I've observed, engage in this behavior. Teenagers and old people. Mm. Neither of which are people who are celebrated in our culture as being the ultimate aspiration of humanity. Teenagers, we're supposed to outgrow that. Nobody wants to grow old, right? And I don't mean age. You know what I mean? I'm talking about becoming brittle and crusty and stuck.
Sure. Unadaptable.
Unadapt.
Yeah. I don't want to interrupt your train of thought.
Well, it just this came to head with this is the final thing is that this came to a head with a friend of mine who is a little bit older than me, who every time I bring up He-Man, it delights in telling me how much He-Man sucks. And it's a dumb name and it's a dumb concept. And to which I reply, yes, it's a dumb name. And yes, it's a silly concept. That's exactly what I love about it. and I'm like, why are you? And the big idea is, like, why do you insist on telling me this? You know you're not going to turn me around on this one, you know? And even if you think I'm wrong, right? And I think about, like, I work with kids all the time, and these kids are always into new things that I didn't grow up with. You know, they're kids to this day are still really into Pokemon. I am not into Pokemon. I don't know that much about Pokemon. But I look at Pokemon and go, there's something there. The designs are interesting. It's appealing somehow. I don't have the time to invest in it the way these kids have. Well, there's Pikachu sitting right behind you.
Exactly. Pika Pika.
And I did go see the Pokemon movie in the theater when I was in my 20s, and I almost bawled when Ash died and Pikachu was heroically trying to resuscitate him.
Wow.
God, that was an intense scene. But anyway, you know, it's like old people look at what young people do and go, lame. Teenagers look at older people and look at what they do, or look at other teenagers and go, lame. Those are the two things we don't want to be. And what's our option? Sincerity and acknowledging the things that we love and holding on to them. And if other people can't understand that, pack up your dinosaurs and go home. I'm done.
That's, I mean, there you go. End podcast.
This has been your extra lean. Sorry.
Did you want to chat a little more?
Yes. Okay. Yes. No, I'm not. It's just, all this is to say is that when I said that you cherish sincerity, I meant it as a sincere compliment.
Well, thank you. Gosh, I'm trying to look up the name of a guy as we're talking here. Mitch Resnick. There we go. He in the 90s during the, you know, as my, I was starting my, I don't even like this word, but career, in, I don't know, doing technology stuff and trying to help people with it. And, I came across this dude because I just was finding interesting resources to help educate myself and become better at what I do. And I found, I do not remember who recommended it. It's probably a friend that recommended this guy to me, but Mitch Resnick with the MIT Media Lab. I mean, that's like, it was under his watch where things like Lego Mindstorms was invented, right? He's into this idea of just learning through play. So this was the beginning of me starting to look at, well, holy crap, is there a connection between the games I enjoy and learning and all that stuff? And and I saw him give a talk actually at the Guthrie, the Walker Art Center. Anyway, on lifelong kindergarten. This is a really cool concept. Where just emphasize, you know, because there's different, you know, you think about learning modalities and, you know, some people are audio learners, some people are visual, some people are hands-on, and kindergarten is all of those things.
And it's
all right to channel lessons through so many different ways. We're not forced into using PowerPoints and you know, poorly crafted lectures. So, let's see, got me to think definitely my 20s at that time. And I'm like, well, where is this career going to go, and how do I improve it and whatever? I'm like, really, is there any other answer other than just continuing to try to, find what I get excited about and learn more about it? And then I thought, well, when does that stop? Anyway, and you reminded me of like that kind of, I would argue during the 80s, growing up in the 80s, there was kind of this model that a lot of folks who were reaching retirement age at that time, you essentially stop doing a thing, and that defines a new era in your life.
Yeah.
And then somehow there's an inactivity that's your reward.
Yeah.
And that didn't sound enticing to me.
No.
Anyway, and so, yeah, there's a lot of it that let's see, I think teens and old people are dealing with hard things also. And I'm just kind of jumping around a little
bit. Okay. Thank you. You are always, always fair in these kinds of judgments. You're right. Teenagers are going through this for the first time.
Yeah.
Hormones are at play. Social integration is at play.
The culture they're a part of is at play, right? I mean, so like, yeah, teens who are in the realm of like, who are in, I don't know, right now today in tough neighborhoods or whatever. I mean, they have cultures that they're immersed in that have certain, present certain opportunities and limitations, right? And or as did people who were in a super heavy duty industrial age mindset in the 80s, saying, here's your gold watch and a pension. And, you know, you went from living with your parents to then finding a job and being, you know, that being your surrogate parent, essentially. Now you're on your own.
Yeah.
Finally. And now what? Now you don't know what to do because no one's telling you anymore, whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, there's all there. And then obviously when you're old, you're, you know, you got the other bad news heading for you.
Yeah. That the end is in sight.
Exactly. Yeah. The end is in sight. What have you, have you done things that feel like you did do a good, you put in what you feel is your best.
Right.
And, or whatever it is, it was worth it.
Right.
And teenagers are like, I don't own any property, and everything about in society is about owning something, and you're telling me what to do, yet I'm getting more physically and mentally capable, and I don't feel like a robot, but I'm supposed to do all these things that, you know, plus I have these crazy, crazy hormones going on.
And you want me to be more responsible about things, but I don't get the agency and freedom to actually act on things. Right.
Yeah. How do I learn that responsibility without being, we have to, exchange trust, but we're of such different cultures. It's difficult.
Sure.
Anyway. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so many different difficulties.
You have been exceedingly fair and even-handed in describing the two characterizations I made pointing in those directions saying, don't be that. But here's my counter argument. I'm going to spin it back at you and say, sweet. Well, doesn't that mean that as a self-responsible adult, I have all the less reason to behave like either of those camps? They're dealing with problems. They get to be jerks. You, the adult who has a degree of agency, or I use the word agency a lot in this discussion, and I apologize.
Agency is huge. Like, so let's say, what do you mean by agency?
The ability to act, to use volition, to act on your decisions. Mm-hmm. And somebody would say, well, but I'm trapped in a job. Mm-hmm. You can pursue other jobs. Mm-hmm. For better or worse, as difficult as that may be, you have the ability there.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, you have the physical ability to take on a variety of jobs. Like, one of the ideas about retirement is, well, you can't do the heavy labor anymore because you're 85 years old, right?
Right.
Totally understandable. But most of the time, in most cases, in a general sense, you can take on a wide variety of jobs because you have the mental and physical faculties to do that. And there's always exceptions to every statement.
Mm-hmm.
But so, then my argument is then you have all the less excuse to behave like a teenager or like a crusty, set, rigid old person. And that's not to say that all old people are that way. I'm just saying that, you know, because I know plenty of people who are well into their 60s and 70s who are giant kids, you know.
Totally. And still in their on their own journey of lifelong kindergarten. I have seen that as well.
Yeah.
And the only reason, whatever, I'm not here to excuse everything. It's just that there's something the human, I don't know. I happen to have the bias that there's a lot of universals in the human experience, no matter your age. So you read a story about young people falling in love. And if, even if you're way not a young person and you're way not currently falling in love, you can very much identify with that because it represents so much of your human experience and needs, you know, to connect and be sharing that kind of connection.
Absolutely. And that's proof that there's your proof right there that there's no need to let life beat that out of you. Right?
Yep.
And when I say life beat it out of you, I mean, you know, frustrations with your work, frustrations with your relationships, frustrations with money. We've all got problems. I don't know. Now I feel like I'm yelling at people. I don't.
No. I don't think you're yelling at people. And that's the thing. That's the danger of starting to argue other sides or even, you know, explore them or whatever. It just, it, being someone that, I don't know what, this might surprise you. I take really strong stances. And this is where, yeah, long-term friends or whatever love to, you know, remind me of these things. And, like I'm the kind of person who will throw a frisbee at you, and if it's like over your head, I'll go, "You gotta want it." And I think that's funny, and right, but it's, you know, it's stupid. Anyway,
trying hard enough.
Exactly, because yeah, there's a voice in my head yelling at me all the time.
I want to go back to something really petty.
Please.
Why did you say you don't like to use the word career?
It's very prescriptive, and it's often not a shared definition.
Mm.
And
so it's not that people with bow ties use it and that makes you mad. It's that its usefulness is questionable.
Yeah, it's a tool to weaken your position in negotiations.
Ooh, whoa.
Watch out.
It's a tool to weaken your position in negotiations.
Yeah.
Explain.
So, you are a snowflake. You are a beautiful, unique instance of something in the universe, and you really do have something of your own value to bring. And the word career does not acknowledge that. That is a sword that cuts both ways. It can provide a bridge. You're like, I don't know what the heck to do next. And then you look up a career thing and you find out, oh, here's some things to do next to do something that I think I want to do. And then let's see. I would say that having rigid definitions of, let's see. So once you commit to that and you grow and you discover and you find your own voice and capabilities within that set of skills and service, right? Mm-hmm. Which is, doesn't sound as cool. It's not as, I would call it a set of skills and service because it's an agreement between you and someone else that you're generally going to do that thing that you both said you would do. Mm-hmm. And, but you're going to find your own take on it. And it might fall outside of what someone else defines as career, but like I would argue that a lot of it, that's where I would say career isn't necessarily serving you as a person anymore at that point, and you will then forever be bumping up against it to find the right kind of role and position that is not defined by you, but you'll, yeah, it's a thing to work around. I've rarely found it to be a really understanding, bridging concept after a certain point in my life.
You know, I wonder if this is why I cringe whenever somebody calls me a podcaster. Hmm. I wonder if that's part of the psychology at work there, because I've been wrestling with this for a couple of years now, and I've been trying to figure out, why does that bother me so much when somebody calls me a podcaster? And I thought, am I ashamed of podcasting? Well, that can't be, because I do an awful lot of it to be ashamed of.
That would be tough road.
Is it a word thing? Is it a nomenclature thing that I got a problem with? I don't think so, because I don't care. It's just broadcasting on the internet, and that's too long. So podcasting sums it up, sure. It's not that. And I'm like, what is it? I'm like, it's a reductive thing, man. I'm not just that.
Yeah.
I'm not just a cartoonist. I'm not just a teaching artist. I am a whole bunch of things. And God, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna go ahead and be the hippie. They're putting me in a box when they say that I'm one thing or another. You're a cartoonist and a podcaster. Oh, why don't you say I'm Jersey Drost and I make a lot of interesting things?
It's a thing to box you, to set you on the shelf along someone else's, you know, definition of the arrangement of things on that shelf. And each box touches only one other box or two other boxes in a chain of value in which you are creating things. And the thing is, we're way more smart than that. We're way more adaptable as a species and as individuals even. And I don't know.
Oh, hold on. My compost is ready.
Exactly. Your compost.
I'm pocket mulching. It's easy to make fun of this, but because it's a tough thing to wrangle, right? Yeah. It's a big squishy thing, but I'm in full agreement with you, but I just don't know how to address it without having to preach at somebody every time they say, oh, you're a cartoonist and a podcaster, right? Oh.
How I'm channeling it is you sell. You figure out what the heck you do and what you want to do for someone, and then you freaking sell that and don't fight fair.
Whoa.
You know what? You pitch your thing, and you can gently acknowledge that whole career context, but don't negotiate based on that. Don't, you know, find the thing that you're bringing and find someone who needs that also, right? I'm not saying just impose it at whoever, but you know, it's like
that might be why some marketing bothers us so much, because sometimes it is an imposition. Right. Yeah,
exactly. Well, that's inherently overly broad marketing is likely going to be imposing on a high percentage of people.
Mm.
And that a lot of marketing that we face is overly broad mass media.
Oh, man. Yeah. You know what? I was having a really awesome discussion with my wife about Google Glass.
Mm.
And not about the privacy implications or things, but it spiraled out into this discussion about why I have such issues with going through airport security. Like I have real reservations about what's happening with airport security and like this whole idea of pat downs and naked body scanners. And it really, as a guy who doesn't like to be touched by strangers and as a guy who values his anonymity in public, it makes me uncomfortable. And she's like, oh, but you let Google track all of your stuff. Right, you let it track your location, and you're interested in this Google Glass thing, which will be even more data sharing with Google. Mm-hmm. And as we were sussing it out and trying to figure out, where's the dissonance? Is this dissonance, or have I reconciled this in my brain? I said, well, you know what? Whenever I give that information to Google, I'm getting a direct benefit in some way. Like my Google Now card will pop up and say, hey, you've got a 15-minute drive to work if you leave now, mm-hmm. right? Thank you for letting me know that. You've been paying attention to when I leave to go to this place, and now you're giving me a little heads up. Or, you know, other different benefits that are very clear to me. Mm. Like, I receive a direct benefit. The benefit I get from getting a pat down in a security line is very indirect. Safety.
Yeah, exactly. It's less tangible, that's for sure.
It's less tangible. And so it's not so much that, oh, I hate the government or I fear things. It's that, oh, I'm not seeing the direct benefit of this guy touching me in places that I wouldn't let my close family touch. So, you know, and so going back to this marketing thing and like selling, it's like, yeah, you sell to the person who needs it because then the benefit is direct and they won't see it as marketing, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you actually are providing something of service. Which means that it's a lot more, in some ways, there's more work to do there. And you know what? Nothing wrong with you if you totally dig the career path and you would rather not have to do that work. And all I'm saying is I really strongly would rather do that work. That's it.
Is that a Radar X behind you? No. Yeah. That's a Radar X. Isn't it?
This?
Yeah, that Destroid.
The Destroid? It's I don't know its name, but it's a Robotech thing.
Sorry, I didn't mean to go off topic, but
no, it's
No, that's not. Radar X has like the little propeller thing on top of its head. No, that's one of the other ones. Oh crap! I used to have that one. I don't have that one anymore.
Yeah. Funny.
The one with the giant guns for arms. I love that one.
Oh yeah.
They didn't use the Destroids enough on that show.
Yeah, you know, there was a bit of reused footage. Anytime they would do the, what was it, the Daedalus attack?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, the Daedalus attack where it opened up its fist and there'd just be a bunch of Destroids sitting there with missiles ready. Yeah, there was that, and then there would always be like the shot of its a bunch of Destroids on the hull of the SDF-1 getting riddled with lasers. That's the only time you ever saw the Destroids.
Yep. Short end of the stick there.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Are we done?
We done.
Okay.
Just... We put it in the ditch. Yep.